Hey, before you listen to or watch this episode of the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast, we've got an exciting summer leadership challenge for you.
That's right. So we're launching the Leader Behavior Builder Challenge that's going to allow leaders just like you to work on six different leadership behaviors or skills that you want to get better at over the course of 90 days.
Yeah. And not only will you be able to benefit from building up your leadership skills, and so your team will as well, you'll have a chance to be entered into a draw to win some prizes. If you work on or enter one leadership challenge for a 2-week period, you'll have a chance to win a $50 Amazon gift card. If you do all the challenges, or at least 5 out of 6, we'll enter you into the grand prize draw for a $500 Amazon gift card.
That's right. So if you want to sign up and get more details, just go to uniquedevelopment.com. So uniquedevelopment.com. You're going to see a bar at the top. You want to make sure you click that. Just give us your contact info so that we can get you signed up. You're going to get an email with all the details about how it's all going to work. And we are starting right at the beginning of July. So don't wait to sign up.
90 days to being a better leader for you and your organization. Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, president of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems, USA. And I'm so glad that you joined us today. Our goal, of course, is always to help you and your company do well, even in uncertain times. Just do the things that you need to do as leaders to make a difference to your company, to your families, to your community. And today's podcast guest is really going to help you on your journey. Matthew and I have only recently met each other, but he made such a positive first impression. I thought, we need to hear from Matt on this podcast. So I'll tell you more about him in just a minute. Now, this episode of the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast is brought to you by a new program we have developed, which is the Site Leader Development Program. That is a program for plant managers and senior leaders, especially in multi-plant operations, to do a better job of empowering their team to run the business and then free themselves up to add even more value in improving and growing the business. So if that interests you or your company, you can reach out to us at uniquedevelopment.com. So let me introduce you to Matthew Showalter. He said, call him Matt, so I will. Let me introduce Matt to you. Again, Matt Showalter is the plant manager at Advanced Pedestals Limited. And his career journey is quite unique, combining experience in manufacturing, IT, and account management. And in fact, just before we started the podcast, he even let Terry, my video producer, know that he used to be even in the AV business at one point. This diverse background, coupled with his expertise in lean manufacturing and Six Sigma implementation, provides him with a well-rounded perspective in operational efficiency. He's successfully managed teams of varying sizes and has a strong history of driving productivity improvements, reducing waste, and ultimately growing profitability within organizations. Matt, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So I also want to point out that if you're interested, Advanced Pedestals, also called API, their website is API-plastics.com. That's API-plastics.com. And Matthew, which is Matthew with one T, Showalter, can be found on LinkedIn. You can find him on LinkedIn. So Matt, one of the things that that impressed me, and we were recently discussing, some strategies for building your frontline leaders at API. But one of the things that I really liked, first of all, you have a very easygoing viewpoint, but I can tell from talking to you, you've had a lot of experience in running operations. I'm curious, if you go back in you've had a pretty varied journey, but as you think about kind of your early part of your career, when did you move from just being enthusiastic to being confident that your approach to things was making a difference? In other words, what's an early win that taught you that I think, I'm onto something in my role?
So I was in the bedding industry at a mattress factory, and I viewed myself as an idea salesman. That's just because a lot of times in those roles, I was brought in to do some lean implementation, and you're accountable for the results, but nobody reports to you.
Right.
So you have to go in there, drive results in an area where you can't just go, hey, just do it.
Yeah.
And so I viewed myself as an idea salesman. And the more and more wins we got, the more it kind of steamrolled and built. And we had a lot of success there. I wanted to then see, well, I've used these skills here, and it's skills I had gathered from the IT world or defense contracting and different blends of Lean Sigma. And I wanted to see, well, does this work? Do my skills transfer? And I moved to a completely different industry and had a lot of great success off the bat. And that's when it sort of clicked for me. People are people.
Yeah.
Right? The processes change, but how we view the processes don't change. There's a lot of transferable skills. And I think that was a little bit of a different viewpoint than people who mentors that I would have that had been 30 or 40 years in an industry that felt like you had to really deep dive and specialize in that industry to be successful. I'm a big believer in we're people focused and process oriented.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you can drive success, right?
Yeah. So let me ask you a question on pulling from that. And I always like our audience to know that I do give a few at least starter questions, and then based on the conversation, we go in some different directions. But knowing that you came out of the lean environment, CI environment, as a practitioner mm-hmm. first, but not an operating leader, and then it clicked when you did move over to that role. I'm just curious what you have seen in the world of lean. Why is it that some lean initiatives really go much better and are better sustained, and other companies just seem to always be hitting a wall with pushing 5S and not getting traction? Do you have any observations that might help our audience?
Sure. So for me, there's a couple different things. One is, for any initiative to be successful, I really believe you have to have clear and consistent messaging. You've got to have that the up and down the organization, right? A lot of organizations get stuck in what I call the 3-week loop. So we hit something hard and we're really super focused on it. And then 3 weeks later, we launch a new initiative.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just not long enough to really embed practices. When it comes to continuous improvement, you've got to have full buy-in across the board, right?
Yeah.
I've been a part of initiatives where the people on the floor were totally bought in. Let's mm-hmm. do it. Let's make it happen. And then an executive leader shifts focus, changes, and the new person comes in. They're not supportive.
Yeah.
And it just kills it flat, right? All that goodwill you've started, all the productivity you've had just dies.
Yeah.
And so I think you've got to have understand that it's not a quick solution,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You'll get some early wins and you get those low hanging fruit, but the whole idea is that it never ends.
Right. If it's not going to be continuous improvement, if it's not continuous. But I think a lot of people, like if you're familiar with the Toyota production system and even the sort of the pillars and the mm-hmm. levels, is I think people forget that the tools are actually like 3 or 4 tiers down from the overall philosophy of it, the commitment
yeah.
to embedding it in the culture. And I think people skip, actually one of our lean consultants said it this way. He says, let's assume that Toyota itself is maybe 66 to 70% aligned culturally with continuous improvement. And that's a pretty amazing. And he said, then you take a company who just latches onto 5S or one of the continuous improvement tools or runs a Kaizen event, they might be only 10% aligned culturally or even less. And they're just grabbing the tool and implementing it. And they don't realize that there's a whole lot of other aspects of culture to it. So I think what you're bringing yeah. to, I love how you said that it's people oriented and process, people driven and process oriented, that we have to, people drive processes, but the processes themselves have to be pretty robust. So I like that. So in your observation, when you think of how leadership effectiveness and operational performance are linked, How much of a correlation is there? Because there's still a lot of companies that doubt the investment, let's say, in leadership development. What have you seen with leaders who are ineffective or effective and how that operates or impacts the KPIs, for example?
So I'm a full disclosure, I'm a servant leadership guy, mm-hmm. right? I didn't even know I was servant leadership until somebody pointed it out. Well, yeah, I guess it's a good point. I kind of align in that.
Hey, hold category. On. We have to pause right there. So before we go down further, we do have to, I mean, a lot of people know what servant leadership is. Describe it for me just in practical terms, what it means. And what you're saying is you were demonstrating it before you had a label on it. But what yes. have you come to understand about that kind of an approach?
So I guess my vision of it, I guess, is that my job is to make sure that all of my people have the proper tools and training, and we make the right decisions easy for them to make. I want to empower people as low down as they can, and that I support them as best they can. If we have issues, we correct the thought process that got us there, and then we turn them loose again.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Yeah, no, I agree. So going back to that then, because you said I kind of interrupted you when you were going down the path of leadership and operational performance. So anything you want to expand? So you take a servant leadership yes. approach, and then what else would you hook into that?
So whenever people ask me about, what's the impact of leadership, I won't say the name of the company, but I was working for a company. I was running their night shift. And there were two directors of two different value streams, and they had very different management styles, very different leadership styles. One leader was very much in the servant leadership mindset, right? I'm listening to my people. I want to hear what they have to say. You know, we make decisions, but we make it with an informed consent kind of a concept, right?
Yeah.
Making sure they have everything that they need. The other one was very much a nothing happens unless I approve it. Mm. Full stop. Mm-hmm. One of the things I do when I go to a new company is I sort of do a flow chart of how decisions get made and things like that. That one was very easy. There was one box and it said, ask the director. Because nothing happened unless they approved it. So fast forward 3 or 4 years, you have Director A still going strong, has a team of very low turnover, high productivity, things are going well. Director B has lower productivity, struggling to hit their schedule, and then he retires.
Yeah.
And everything falls apart because he had taught his people to not think and not make decisions. And that was the best example I could see of how leadership had a direct impact on your productivity, on your profitability, because it took 3 or 4 more years to resurrect that department into profitability.
Wow. I love, by the way, even though I hate to hear the story, I love the story because it so well illustrates kind of how KPIs are connected to leadership. Now, one thing, because you mentioned servant leadership and also decision-making, so we have a model that we call decision-making waste. And essentially it says, you know, you've got all the leaders at different levels, you know, executives, managers, supervisors, frontline team members, employees. And, you know, the people at the frontline should run the business. The people in the middle should improve the business. And the people at the top should be growing the business, right? So you've obviously been living this. But what I'm wondering is either why don't leaders, let's approach it from two angles. One thing I'll hear from leaders is they'll say, you know what, the people don't want to take accountability and responsibility. They don't want to learn more. So they just bring their problems to me and I solve them. So that's the one angle. The other angle is where, so that's almost like the perception is the people just want to work for a paycheck. They just want to come in and do their work and then they want to go home and they don't want to think or do anything. So that's one approach to why leaders end up taking on that assignment. What's your own sense of that? Like why do some leaders think that the employees don't want to do anything more than the bare minimum? Is that just in the leader's mindset?
So then that's the expectations that we set. So I'll give you a good example. My team that I have now, I've got three or four folks on the floor that have a lot, that they have potential.
Yeah.
I'm going to push them to make more decisions than I am someone who's new and doesn't have the experience. Right.
Right. Yeah.
It's something you have to grow into. But what I do is I start to kind of push them into, almost floor leads.
Yeah.
Right. So they can be an assistant to their supervisor. They're still doing all the same work.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing that I run into in those situations is what's in it for me. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, I don't want the responsibility because then you're going to yell at me if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And that's usually because they've somewhere in their past, in their story, so that's happened to them, where they saw it happen to somebody and they said, hey, I don't want any part of that.
Right.
Right. From a leadership perspective, I have to earn the trust of them that I'm not going to come down on you like the wrath of God if you make a mistake.
Yeah.
My guys are sick of me hearing this, hearing me say this already, but a mistake's not a mistake. A mistake is only a mistake if you don't learn from it.
Right.
If you learn from it, it wasn't a mistake. It was an investment.
By the way, just as an aside, you know, the expression is you're either winning or you're learning. Right. You're not really losing. You're gaining some knowledge. Hopefully you don't repeat it too many times. Although in all honesty, we all make mistakes repeatedly before we really learn from them. But like you said, you're trying to get a better body of knowledge. So you become more and more capable. So you're saying that's part of the process of getting these frontline employees, just getting comfortable with the fact that you're allowing them to make the call. They might make a mistake every once in a while. They're going to learn from that.
Absolutely. And that we have to be able to build them up and include them in our decision-making process, right? So I may pull some of my operators in and have a quick chat with them and go, hey, this is what we're thinking of doing. What do you think? Yeah. How do you feel about it? How would you make this better? If this situation happened to you, what would you do?
Yeah.
And so we kind of build them up. One of the things, questions that I ask when something goes wrong, the first question I ask is, help me understand the logic that got us here.
I love, right? By the way, I love that question because what people don't realize is if you assume a positive intent, that people aren't deliberately evil for the most part and they want to do good things, you know, you have to keep your guard up for the odd person who might be deliberately evil, but most aren't, is in their mind, it made total logical sense to do whatever it is that they did. And I love that idea. Like, let me understand the logic that got you to that choice and that decision. And again, they just might not have the experience that knows that there were several negative consequences to that choice, right?
Yep. Yeah, if we can correct the logic that led to the bad decision, then they'll make the right decision the next time is the theory, right? I'm a big believer in I want to push down decision-making as low as I can feasibly do it, because that means it also forces me to train and communicate effectively. If I don't communicate anything to the folks on the floor, how can I expect them to make a good decision?
Yeah.
So it keeps me accountable as well to make sure that I keep my communication as clear and transparent as possible.
Right. Yeah. Because if you want them to make decisions, they need access to the information as well.
Absolutely.
That sort of deals with the fact that people who feel that the employees don't want to take up sort of greater ownership and accountability, you're really saying, hey, I'm going to just enter into a relationship with them where they know I'm on their side, and especially if they show some initiative, and I'm just going to help build them over time and get their wisdom and knowledge built up over time. What about from the other angle, which is the manager, I don't know, not wanting to let go? I mean, the extreme case would be the director that you talked about earlier, who just said, everything has got to funnel through me. But why else do leaders not, I don't know, they just don't seem to want to let go. They want their people almost to bring them stuff to ask them questions. Do you have an angle from the leadership side why that happens?
Oh, sure. I think a lot of that comes from two areas. I think it comes from the insecure leader, right? The one who, you know, if I show that other people can make these decisions, they're not going to need me. Or it also comes from the one of the things that I tell my first time leaders is the thing that made you great as an operator is the thing that will kill you and make you fail as a supervisor.
Wow. Right? Or a frontline
leader. Because the thing that made you great as an operator was you could touch it and it would be good. It'd be perfect. You knew it was going to be done right because you did it. The more your sphere of influence expands, you have less and less time in your day to do everything. You can't do everything. There's not enough time in the day. You have to learn how to delegate and follow up, right? Trust, yeah. But verify. You have to learn that if you want to be successful. Otherwise, you're going to burn yourself out. And I think a lot of times people feel like the only good decision is the one that I make.
Yeah.
Because and it just shows, again, it kind of feeds back into that insecurity, which is the I don't trust my people to make the right decision.
Yeah. I think you've nailed it. It's interesting that the fear almost or the insecurity in the leader. I actually had a colleague who shared a different take on it. We were doing some work doing this new site leader development program. And he said one of the top reasons that he saw for why leaders didn't really want to hold people accountable is, or even to empower them, is they feared having the conversation when somebody let them down, which is a different angle I hadn't even considered. Like, I don't want to have this discussion when somebody lets me down to let them know that. So I'm just going to take it back and do it and almost protect them from having to do that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely something I've encountered is that fear of, I just call it fear of confrontation.
Yeah.
You know, where it's hard to have the hard conversation.
Right.
But I just have to, for me, it's a matter of helping my people to see that the longer you put it off, the harder it gets.
Yeah.
So the sooner you jump in there and deal with it, the better it gets. And again, some of it comes back to having that relationship, right?
Right.
If I've got a good relationship with the folks that work for me or my peers even, it's way easier to have that conversation and go, hey, we chose to do this and this is what happened. How do we not do that again?
Yeah. Hey, right? I'm curious to take a slightly different angle. And then I do want to come, I want to talk about silos in a minute, but I'm just curious. We all learn, like you said, we all have to learn from our mistakes. And I'm curious, was there ever, or I shouldn't say was there ever, because there's always these lessons. I'm just wondering, what's one of the lessons you learned, maybe the harder way, earlier on in your career, in terms of something that didn't go as well as it could have, and then you learned something from that? Can you think of one?
Man, where do I start?
Yeah, exactly.
trying to think of one that I can break down into a sort of brief synopsis. So I was in my career, early in my career, I viewed myself as an idea salesman. Well, which meant Matt was always smiling, happy-go-lucky, nothing was ever wrong,
yep.
Right? Because no one wants to buy an idea from a guy who's upset.
Okay. Adam. Like that, yeah.
And so I it was actually at the company that I was, where I gave the reference to earlier.
Right. Yeah.
And I would get just grilled every day when a technical thing would go wrong.
Yeah.
Well, did you do this? Did you do that? And of course we were on night shifts and there's no support, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I got to clean this up a little bit. there was actually a memo that had got put out in that company that said we will no longer hire I'm gonna say tyrants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And everyone kind of was like, oh, so we're gonna get rid of this guy, right? I guess are we announcing to the company that this guy's not gonna be here anymore? And he and I were having a conversation and he said, nobody likes tyrants, but you know who gets stuff done?
Oh.
Is tyrants.
Uh-huh.
And the lesson that I learned was there's a balance.
Yeah.
You can't be, you know, happy, smiley, ray of sunshine while your ship is sinking.
Yeah.
That's not effective.
Yeah.
you can't be riding everybody and demanding performance and holding people accountable when things are going great.
Yeah.
Right. We've got to have that balance of, and it's ever shifting, is there's got to be some steel to the smile.
You got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So in other words, your lesson was really that earlier on, you were just really happy go lucky, you know, be everyone's friend and just help make helpful suggestions. And you learned that there are times when you have to just get a little bit more serious or more to the point. And I would agree. I think actually that's actually something, as you know, with our leadership model, because I went through this with you, is we say that leaders start at the buddy level, then they often, you know, eventually accept that they're a supervisor and then, you know, move up to being a hero and to a coach. And in order to do that, you just realize that people get the mixed message. It's sort of like in feedback when they say it's called the crap sandwich, right? Say something nice, say something difficult, end with something nice.
Yes.
There's still a place for that, but it also confuses the heck out of people because they don't know, like, am I doing well? Am I not doing well? Are we talking about something that needs improvement or not? So it sounds like you just learned the importance of people being able to read the message properly at the given time.
Right, because I would think I'm holding people accountable, and they walk away going, I think we're okay. I think we did what we're supposed to do. And so I had to go back and learn, like, you know, when you're holding people accountable, it can't be sunshine and rain. I'm not selling anybody anything at that point, right? We're not selling ideas. We're saying, this was the expectation. We're here. How do we close that gap?
Yeah.
Right? And understanding that for me to do my job most effectively, I have to give them the opportunity to raise their level to the expectation.
Yeah. Hey, just on a related note, I was just curious on your views of friendship leadership. I mean, that's one of the subjects we have in our frontline leadership program, is just how, when you're promoted out of a group, how do you manage those relationships? When I don't know if you've yourself been in that dilemma or not, but what's your view of it from the dilemmas that a frontline leader makes when they get promoted out of a work group?
So I've been on both sides of it. I've been where I worked for my best friend before. And I've had it to where I've been had a friend group and I got promoted up out of it. To me, it all comes back to setting clear expectations. When I worked for my buddy, we did a terrible job of setting that expectation. Well, I'll say he did a terrible job.
And you took advantage of it.
1,000%. 100%.
I got you.
Yeah. You know, he wanted to be buddy-buddy when it suited him and then turn around. And it just, the messaging was awful. So when I got promoted up, it was, hey, guys, just so you know, off the clock, I'm your buddy, I'm your pal. Mm-hmm. As soon as that clock rings, as soon as that bell rings, we're not friends. Mm-hmm. Just be aware of that. Like, I have a job, you have a job. I expect you to do it.
Yeah.
I was actually in a position where my wife worked underneath me.
Oh, wow.
In a role. And it was kind of funny because someone mentioned to her that, oh, you must have it easy being the plant manager's wife. And she's like, are you kidding me? He holds me to a higher standard than anybody because he knows that I know how this stuff is supposed to work because he never shuts up about it.
That's like the coach's kid is on the team. They often think the coach's kid gets an easier run, but a lot of times the coach's kid actually is expected more from them because they have to lead by example.
If I know you, I have a much higher expectation out of you because I know you and I know what you're capable of.
Hey,
and I won't accept anything below that.
I want to go to silos for a minute. And I realize you're in you're in a mid-sized company, but you've been in large companies, small companies that actually, you might see it more in a large company, but there are these like different silos and departments. And in fact, I'm doing a special edition of the podcast, depending when it comes out, on this idea of these organizational groups or centers of excellence or support functions and the silos that can form between, say, manufacturing, maintenance, quality, R&D, and so forth. And I just wondered, what have you noticed in the organizations that had less siloing versus the ones that had more siloing? I'm told that siloing isn't necessarily always a bad thing because we need people to focus in certain areas. But I was curious whether you had a take on silos.
So for me, I'll give you an example. of a salary that was bad. I won't name the company. I was working at a company, and the conversation during a meeting came up about another team. Now, they actually worked, I mean, geographically, they were 30 feet away from us. Mm-hmm. And our boss basically told us, we don't like them. Don't talk to them. They work for such and such group. Don't help them.
Oh, wow.
Right? So that's an example of siloing going wrong. Because there was some cross-functional potential there.
Right.
And it died immediately. Now, I have seen siloing that goes well, where you've got sort of a specialized capabilities. But I think it starts at a leadership level,
right?
Is that your leaders have to make sure that we are sending the message of teamwork and there's one name on the door.
Right. Collaboration.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if your thinking has evolved the same way. I actually, you know, even in my own maturity, and you'd probably smile at this yourself, like if I asked you how much better you are or different you are as a leader now versus when you first started your career, would you agree that you're like at leadership 4.0 or 5.0 versus your 1.0 self?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right. So, absolutely. So then, as part of my evolution, I used to think, you know, maintenance is there to serve production, right? Like maintenance is customers' production. But then I realized it really isn't like that in an organization. And you kind of said this when you said there's one name on the door. Really, maintenance collaborates with production to meet the serve the customer. And I think that's probably the angle you're going at there, which is I have a specialized set of skills, but I'm here to add value to our relationship so that we can collaborate for the customer, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And so early on in my career, when I would come into a department, I would identify who our internal and external customers were. And that's how I viewed it, right? And when you kind of box yourself out like that, we didn't reach out to those internal customers and go, how can I make your life easier?
Right.
Right. How can I better feed you what you need so that you can perform your job better? Right. There wasn't that collaboration. It was just, I need to produce a product because I've got a customer, internal customer that needs it. Whereas now I'm more looking as, what are the needs of the organization and how do we best serve those? Right. Yeah. So through some of the sort of Lean Sigma work we've done, it's not enough for me to do my job. I need to do my job in a way that sets the next area up for success.
Right. So I love what you're saying. I'm curious. And again, we're talking with Matthew Showalter or Matt. And if you need to reach Matthew, you can do one of two ways. It's Matthew with one T in his name. Matthew Showalter. He's at api-plastics.com, which is Advanced Pedestals is the name of the company. You can also look him up, of course, on LinkedIn. Again, Matthew Showalter is how you'll find him there. And Matthew, you know, we've covered so much ground already in very practical ways that I think will help our audience. I'm just curious if there's any last things that you want to contribute in terms of something that I should have asked you and I didn't.
No, I think we've covered most of it. The only, I guess, if lasting words or anything I would leave is that, you know, the biggest problem that I see with leaders is when they decide that they've learned enough. When they decide that, like, I've achieved maximum status and I heard a quote one time when I was very young and it stuck with me, which was, that you die twice. The first time you die when you actually die, but the first time you die is when you stop learning.
Wow. I love it.
And so I would encourage folks to don't be satisfied with where you are, but to continue pushing on to that next level because there's always a next level.
Awesome. And actually, you know, that reminds me again back to that leadership progression model, right? And you go, you know, you start off as buddy, become a supervisor, you might aspire to become a hero. And a lot of people stop right there. As long as I become like the most knowledgeable person at my level, I have job security and I can stop there. And then for those like yourself who realize that, you know, you got to move up to the coach level. Now you're measured not so much on how smart you are, but how many great people do you leave behind as future leaders who are able to grow and develop? And I know it's the problem is a lot of people say, well, I don't get really paid for that. I'm paid for my expertise or getting to this director level or something. And they don't realize, no, it's a perpetual lifelong journey of learning and growing and most importantly, helping other people learn and grow. So
absolutely. I am just as proud. So I'll hit this briefly, then I'll go, I promise. People ask me all the time, why manufacturing? I've done a lot of different things. And manufacturing is my home. And I tell them it's the same reason that I enjoy developing people. And that is, I can walk onto my shipping dock at the end of the day. It doesn't matter if I had a good day or a bad day. I can look at that shipping dock and I can know that those things didn't exist until today.
Right.
These things were created. They were, you know, something that didn't exist now does, and I got to have a small part in that.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with people as we develop our people. So, yeah, I tell my people all the time, I want you to be the best version of you that you can be. Now, don't get me wrong. That's going to make you a better employee while you're here. But I don't care if I'm developing you to go to somewhere else. I want you to be the best you you can be. And I've got that same satisfaction of seeing as people that have worked for me that are supervisors or directors or managers in other companies and knowing that I got to have a small part in who they are. It's that same feeling.
That's
what drives that passion.
So what's it? I did another special edition of the podcast, which is basically where I don't have a guest and I talk about something. And I talked about development, because a lot of companies do their employee surveys and they kind of get feedback that says that, you know, employees don't feel like they're getting enough training and development and that sort of thing. And again, companies think, oh, but I put you through that half day forklift training or something, thinking that that's what development is. And what you're really framing it as, development is you taking the human potential of someone on your team and you're basically helping them grow and develop and mature so that they feel that working for you was, first of all, was awesome. Enjoyed working for Matt, enjoyed working for the company. Whether I stayed at the company or I went on, I might still remember that leader who took me under their wing or saw some potential in me and encouraged me. All right. And I'm staying in touch maybe with that person for decades later. And I think too many leaders are playing it too safe instead of realizing that I love how you said it. We're making products that didn't exist. We're taking human potential that didn't exist and we're developing them. So I think anybody watching this podcast knows that why I chose to have you on is because here's a whip smart person who knows a lot of things about lean and continuous improvement and running manufacturing operations, but he packages it in this nice folksy, let's collaborate together. And I think, you know, we don't see a lot of that. And I need you to know that from an encouraging standpoint, because sometimes when you're good, sometimes you know you're good. Sometimes you just need reassurance. I just need you to understand that packaging of knowing the nice nuts and bolts about how stuff works, but packaged in this, like, hey, let's do this together and collaborate, is not as common as it should be. So, Matt, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. So, again, as our audience, I hope you got a lot from Matt and realize that it's not about your ego. It's not about, only your advancement. It's really what you're doing to make your company better, to make your people better, to grow them to their full capabilities. And that's, of course, what our mission here at Accelerating Operational Performance. So if you want to talk to us about any of our development programs, whether it's the Frontline Leadership Program, or whether it's our OPAL program, which is Operational Performance and Leadership, or maybe it's the SLDP, the Site Leader Development Program, we're here for you. And it starts with a conversation at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, I'll just sign off and say best wishes for success on your leadership journey.